Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School, the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the rackets when we come back. You know, once in a while, we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither John Swinton nor the press offered Swinton a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon and to sell his country and to sell his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. So what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, he said, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, now, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program, this New World Order. It's the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, and Bushes, and Bundys, and Carnegies. Now, that's why I contend that it's time we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and to stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. Just call and ask for it at the number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Hey, we're talking about rackets. I didn't realize that there were so many of these rackets around, but I got to thinking about it. Last week I did a story on cancer, the cancer racket, or cancer is a racket. It's a $500 billion a year racket. And then I got to thinking about it and said, well, my God, education is a racket. Now, remember, I went to the dictionary. The definition of a racket is something that isn't legal. It's something that's not honest. It's dishonest. It's something that's fraudulent. And it's something that, or it can be something that is accompanied by a threat or by actual harm. So, you know, something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. Well, who sets these standards? Who makes these laws? Well, the first and primary lawgiver was our Creator, God Almighty, in the Bible. You find these laws. Then we have the legislature comes along, and the legislature alters, reforms, or amends the law of God. Sure, let me show you. In the Bible, it's against the law to be a prostitute. Prostitution, whoredom, is prohibited. In fact, it's punishable by death. But out in Nevada, I think they've got six counties out there in Nevada where they license prostitution, where it's legal. You go down and you get a business license to open a whorehouse. It's like any other business. So they legalize something that's criminal. So, and then they turn around and say, well, now see, there's nothing wrong with prostitution. It's legal. Now, the people of Nevada will buy into that, but down here in the Bible Belt, people won't. So they don't legalize prostitution in Alabama, but they practice it down there. And the people of Alabama, they don't take the whores out and stone them to death. No, they catch them and they fine them. You see, that's the way you legalize prostitution in Alabama or New York or any other place where people are objecting, people that are religious. Religious people basically are hypocrites. I mean, let's just face it and be real. You know, they talk a lot about morality. These religious people, you know, they get real uppity and they talk about morals and things like that. Listen, I got to looking at some numbers the other day because I went over to the DX station and Garrison, oh boy, he's trying to sell me one of these dish satellite TVs, and I'd like to buy one. Hell, I'd kind of like the idea of having, I think it was 140 channels. I'm not sure I could count to 140, but 140 channels. And so I said, well, Boyd, I really don't need 140 channels, but I'll tell you, I'd like to buy the service, and I'd like to get the History Channel and the Disney Channel and the Discovery Channel, and, you know, there's a few channels on there I'd like to buy. And I said, the thing that really is obnoxious and demeaning, and I don't want those two pornography channels. And I think there's two, hell, there might be 20, I don't know. But anyway, he said, well, darn, you know, I when I sell this package, this Dish TV, I have to sell the whole thing, see? And you got to buy all 140. Now, you can block them. You know, you can put a blocker on there. Now, you know, I used to be a kid myself, and my dad had certain rules and regulations, and I just worked overtime trying to figure a way around all of his rules and regulations. Human beings do that. Governments come along, and they invent laws and rules and regulations, and you spend all of your time trying to figure out how you can best the government and skirt and violate all those rules and regulations now, don't you? That's just, you know, it's human nature. It's the way it is. So, you know, I've got a teenage daughter here, and I guarantee you that teenage daughter will be watching those pornography channels, especially if I block them. I mean, out of 140, she might miss them accidentally. But as soon as I block them out, she's going to say to herself, what is it that they don't want me to see? Ah, that's the, you know, that's the fruit tree in the Garden of Eden. You know, what? You mean I can't eat off of that tree? That's the only tree in the garden Eve wanted to eat off of after she was told she couldn't eat off of it. So anyway, you know, bottom line over here was I got to looking the other day, and 70% of Americans, you got that? 70% of Americans watch the two pornography channels. I didn't know that. I'm in a minority. I'm in that minority of only 30% that aren't watching these two pornography channels, although I did see them once in a motel. I was flipping through the channels, and I saw them naked hussies on the TV screen, but I didn't inhale. Now listen, boys and girls, I'm pretty familiar with Flo's Whorehouse. I mean, I know what whores are for and how to use them. You know, I'm not sitting here telling you, you know, that I'm a righteous Rosie. And I'm pretty knowledgeable, like I thought I was, until I saw that pornography channel, and I'm telling you, I never saw anything like that in my life. Hell, I never saw that at Mustang Ranch. Honest to God, I thought I was pretty damn worldly, but I got news for you. Yeah, it was so rotten, so sick, so perverse, so filthy that I couldn't watch it. And hell, I'm a construction worker. I ain't quite a longshoreman, but, you know, construction ain't too far away. So, moral to the story was, I said, I don't want that. But when I saw 70% of Americans view, watch, subscribe to, and pay money for those two channels. So, for the rest of you people in the world, you want to know what's wrong with us over here? Hell, we wallow in this stuff. We have it piped right into our houses. Now, here's the other side of the coin. 65% of Americans go to church. I got to thinking, well, gee, how many of those 65% of Americans that go to church? Let's try it this way. Let's suppose that out of the 70% that are watching, you know, the pornography channels, which means that only 30% ain't watching. Let's suppose that the 30% are all religious people. Now, that isn't true, because I ain't a religious people, and I won't watch the damn thing. I won't even have it pumped into my house. I will not pay money to have those two channels brought into my house. I ain't doing it. So that's how opposed I am to it. But I'm not religious about it. I'm not going to church every Sunday. But 65% of Americans do go to church every Sunday. So let's take that 30%. And let's subtract it from the 65%, and that leaves us 35% of Americans that go to church every Sunday, subscribe to, pay money to, and have that pornography channel brought into their house. That's the third. One-third of Americans go to church every Sunday and sit there and wallow in that filth and perversion. I don't know about you, but Jesus told us not to do that. He said, that's bad for you. Of course, nobody listens to Jesus anyway. Just thought I'd point that out to you. Now, that's a part and parcel with education. Because we get the sex education in our public schools. And we get the sex education in our churches, or the lack thereof, because the church isn't teaching you thou shalt not commit adultery. They won't teach you the Ten Commandments. They'll let you wallow in the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto till your heart's content. They don't have any bad words about public education. Go ahead, send your kid to public school. Let's take a look at public school, because it's a racket. It's a racket. It's a $500 billion a year racket, is what it is. And get this. Two-thirds of the money that you're spending on public school goes to administration. Remember last program I said the reason I won't give any money to charity is because 90% of it goes to fundraising or something other than giving food to the starving kid in Peru. Well, in public education, ain't quite that bad. You give the public schools $1 of your tax money, and 67% goes to administration. Administration, that's just paying for public school. One-third of it, 33%, actually goes to teachers for salaries and buildings to send your kid to, and books and desks and stuff like that to actually educate your kid. So one-third of what you're paying out of $500 billion a year actually goes for education, and the other two-thirds, by the way, what is a third of 500? It's just 500 times 0.33. $165 billion a year actually goes to educating your child. And $335 billion a year goes to administration, kind of like the preachers and their fundraising, you know. And I'm sitting here saying, well, I'm not going to send a dollar to educate a kid in public school and have two-thirds of it spent on some clut sitting in an office someplace trying to figure out how to teach communism to my kid. I don't need that. I'm not paying for it. But Americans love it. They wallow in it. We think public school in this country is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. Public school in this country is second only to Social Security when you're talking about the third rail of politics now. Presidential candidates, they come on the air and they tell you about our children are our future. We love education and we're going to spend more money on it. Jesus. Now, the last thing in the world I want to do is spend more money on education. Let me give you a couple numbers there. Write this down. Give you something to talk about over dinner tonight. You're spending $500 billion a year on public school, and then you got about 50 million kids going to public school. That's about $10,000 per year per student. $10,000 a year. There isn't another country in the world. There's 209 countries out there in the world. Not another country in the world spends $10,000 a year on education. None of them do. So we got that one all by ourselves. We're champions. In some of our public schools, the costs go up pretty dramatically. Like in New York State, the average is $14,000. Now, that's your nationwide average is 10, and then, of course, there's some school districts, not states, but some school districts that spend $25,000 per child. And here's the number that really ought to boggle your brain. The more money that you spend on education, the dumber the kid is. I'm not kidding you a bit. Listen to this. If you're educating your kid in public school, just average Joe Sixpack public school, and then you take that kid out and test him, he will score at the 50th percentile. 50th. I'm not quite sure what 50th percentile means. My boy, who's a national merit scholar, smart kid. I mean, just smart kid, got lots of you know, going for him. He's got lots of going for him, but he's just dumb as a box of rocks. I mean, you know, he can turn on the computer and make it work. I can't even turn the damn computer on. Now, I like my kid, and he's a wonderful fellow in one thing and another, but, you know, he's kind of like a merit. He's educated in public school, and he's been reading the same propaganda that the rest of us are reading, but he hasn't recovered from it yet. Some of us actually recover. I remember my gold broker told me one time he was a recovering Catholic. He's 65 years old. I'm still a recovering Catholic. You know, you may never recover from Catholicism. But anyway, this public school system over here, when you're talking about smarts, 50th percentile, well, you know, if it's 50% or smarter or 50% or dumber, or, you know, you can answer half the questions, whatever it is, that's 50. Okay, now, I guess you could score 100 or you could score 0, but the average kid in America that goes to public school scores at the 50th percentile. All right. Now, if he goes to an inner-city public school like New Orleans or Washington, D.C., where they're really dumb, where the kids are just really stupid, they score at the 28th percentile. That's right. 28, that's right at 25. So your kid, if he's average and going to any other school in America, is twice as smart as the kid going to New Orleans or Washington, D.C., where they score at the 25th or 28th percentile. But now, hey, get this. If you send this kid to a parochial school, Catholic school, Baptist school, military school, any private school someplace. Send your kid to a private school, guess where he's going to score, on average, nationwide. He'll score at the 80th percentile. 80. God, that's a lot better than 50. It's even more better than 28. Yeah, that's a private school. Now, you're sitting there saying, well, gosh, I don't think I can afford to send my kid to a private school. So, you know, I've got to send him to public school. I'll just have to be satisfied with 50. Now, 50 is the average. Some will score a little higher. Some will score a little lower than that. Now, there might even be some public school kid out there that tests at the 80th or 90th percentile. I'm not saying that there isn't. But, you know, we're talking about 50 million kids, and 50 million kids, I think it's 47 million, go to public school. All right, where do you think they'd score if they went to homeschool? You know, if mom and dad are educating these kids, and they're not really professional, don't have a teaching credential, never went to college, just high school graduates themselves, maybe. Where do you think a kid like that, in an underprivileged school, like home school, where do you think he'll score? Well, write this down, because it's the 86th percentile, and that's the average. Average. There's probably some dummies that score around 28, but then there's got to be some more that score higher than 86. That's your home school. Now, by the way, just in case you were wondering, God requires that you educate your child in home school to the Ten Commandments. That's his criteria. He insists that your child has a legal education. God, the creator of the universe, wants all children. He wants you and me and everybody in the world to have a legal education. Of course, you saw that and said, hell, that's a bunch of crap. I'm going to give my kid a liberal arts education. You did. By God, he's liberal. I don't know how good his arts are, but he's liberal. All right, now take a look at that. Now let's ask, how much does it cost for this? You got this down? 28, 50, 80, and 86. Got those four numbers down? All right. So if he's an inner-city public school kid, 28. If he's an average public school kid, it's 50. If he's a parochial school kid, that's private school, it's 80. And if he's educated in homeschool, it's 86. And you got those four numbers? Okay. Here's what it costs to educate those children for 1 year. 1 year. Okay. The 28th percentile, inner city public school, average cost, $18,000 a year nationwide. At the 50th percentile, average nationwide, $10,000 per child. At the 80th percentile, Catholic school, it costs on average $2,600 to educate that kid. Homeschool, average cost to educate a homeschool kid, $546 a year. All right, now let's take a look at our numbers and see what we come up with. Because our government tells us that the solution to the problems with public school is more money. That's number one. Number two, more teachers. That's number two. Number three, smaller class size. And when we do that, those three, our kids will be just smart as whips, smarter than any other people in the world. And that's what we're paying for. All right, now we actually tested this. We've actually gone out into the marketplace and done it. Been there and done that. So let me tell you the story here. It is a potent commentary on the current state of American education when, after 2 years of extensive study, the Japanese researchers could find no specific aspect of American education considered worth emulating. The Japanese came over to America, sent a group of Japs over here and said, take a look at those Americans and their school system, and let's see what those Americans are doing, and if there's anything that's good, bring it back to Japan and let's put it into practice here. So they did. They came over here to the United States, they took a look around, and when they got all through, they said, we can find no specific aspect of American education considered worth emulating. Here's the reason why. A University of Illinois at Chicago study found that the average American high school student would rank 99th in math when compared with 100 average Japanese students. If you put this American in with 100 Japs, he would rank number 99. There'd only be one dumber Jap in Japan, dumber than an American in the math test. That's on average. I mean, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that every kid in America is a dumbbell. I'm sitting here saying that on average, the majority are. Now, you're spending more money than anybody else in the world to turn out the dumbest people that money can buy. Now, if that's not a racket, you tell me what is. Now, first of all, it's illegal because God told you to give them a legal education to the Ten Commandments, and you said, no, I'm going to give them a liberal arts education in politics with the basis, the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Well, okay, now we've done that. Now, what's the results of it? The Japanese come over and say, we can't find anything worth emulating. It gets better. Now, the academic decline in America's public schools has posed a threat to the business community. American business has restructured many programs in order to accommodate weaker students. The reason for the restructuring is obvious. In 1987, the New York Telephone Company gave its simple 50-minute exam in basic reading and reasoning skills. They gave that exam to 21,000 applicants for entry-level jobs and only 16% passed. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You take 21,000 people, that's a bunch of people, and they come into your office and you give them a test. And 84% of them flunk the test. Only 16% can pass this test. So when you want to hire somebody, you know, to do a job, you got to bring in, you know, 10 people over here, and only one or two of them are going to pass. The other eight are going to flunk. What do you think of that? When I was a kid, even when I went to public school, when I was a kid, if you'd taken 21,000 students out of the high school in Eureka, California, you might have had 5 or 10 that couldn't pass a test for the telephone company. Maybe. There might have been 5 or 10. I don't know. We had some kind of dumb kids in our school. Well, I'll guarantee you that 99% of them would have gone in there and taken a job at the crummy telephone company. You know, that's not rocket science. Now, listen to this. A Department of Education study found that 1 in 3 young adults with a degree from a 2 or 4 year college could not correctly answer this question. Okay. Now, here for all you college kids out there, let's test you. We'll see. The Department of Education, they went out there and they studied children, young adults, not little kids, but, you know, 20-year-old, 22, 24-year-old people. And they found that if you've got a 2 or 4 year college education, they could not answer this question. If you spend $1.95 for a sandwich and 60 cents for a bowl of soup, and you give the cashier $3, how much change should you receive? I don't know if you can figure this out in your head, but $1.95 for a sandwich and 60 cents for a bowl of soup. Can you do that? You give the girl three $1 bills. How much change should she give you back? Well, the answer is 45 cents. But 1/3 of the college graduates missed it. College graduates couldn't make change out of $3. I notice when I go into the stores now that they've got these electronic cash registers, and you give the girl a $20 bill, the bill's $16.50, and it pops up, you know, on a screen, you know, a little stand sticking up there on the cash register says change, $3.50. honest to God, if the machine didn't tell that girl what the change was, she wouldn't be able to make change. She couldn't calculate that. A University of Texas study revealed that out of 15,000 people tested, 40% couldn't figure correct change from a store purchase. You know, you walk into the store, you buy something, 15,000 people, they test them. You know, they say, hey, what's the change that's due you? They can't figure it out. In 1987, a number of banks in New York City, the public school district, agreed to place 400 students into entry-level positions. The bank's criterion for employment was nothing more than simple standard job entry skills. They could only qualify 100 students, 25%. The others did not even have the basic reading and writing skills required for employment. This is back in 1987, and then it's progressively getting worse. Your students today in 2008 are dumber than they were in 1987, and they were dumber than they were in 1977, 67, 50. How come they're constantly getting dumber and dumber? It's not an accident. They're being dumbed down. It's a plan. It's a fraud. It's a racket. There's motivation behind this. So I sit here and I say, well, listen, did anybody ever tell you this before? Did you ever figure this out for yourself? The more money you spend educating children in public school, the dumber they get. If you want to have the smartest, sharpest, brightest child, you educate him at home for $546 a year. If you're not concerned about the brightest child, send him to Catholic school. He'll be a little dumber. It only costs you $2,600, about, you know, four times as much. You can spend four times as much money, and you can get one that's about 10, 15% dumber. If you really want a dumb kid, send him to public school, spend $10,000, and he'll be about, you know, 65% dumber than homeschool. And if you really want a stupid kid, send him to Washington, D.C. or New Orleans, an inner-city public school where he'll score on average at the 28th percentile and it costs you $18,000 a year to cut. Now, if that's what you want, that's what you've got, that's what you're buying, stick with it. It's a winner. Proven. And by the way, I didn't just dream these numbers up. I'm just reporting to you from a book, book called America, To Pray or Not to Pray by David Barton. It's a dynamite book. I think you'll want a copy of it if you want to find out why your kid's dumb and why you're paying so much money in tax. Now, you're paying $500 billion a year, like it or lump it, for this kind of results. And your presidential candidates tell you we need more of it, both of them. I was watching both of them. You want to ask them what they're going to do with education? They're both going to continue the public education system. Boys and girls, the solution is to abolish the public school system. My God, you can't do worse. The worst educational program in America today is the public school. It's the worst you can buy, and it's the most expensive. Abolish it, and your kid will get smarter. Can't miss. And that's because the public schools are there dumbing them down. If you just stop dumbing them down, he will absorb more knowledge. Just leave him alone. He could learn more out on the streets at McDonald's than he can in the public school, which is where he's getting most of his education anyway. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. O-R-G. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Notice, a homeschooling program for adults. Don't send any of these dumb kids around here. I don't want them. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour, or all of these Law Hour programs, are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's where you're listening. Convenience in the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we recommend and endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the rackets. And one of the big rackets, maybe not the biggest racket, but a very big one, one of the biggest, is the public education system. It consumes about $500 billion a year. It's equal to cancer in the scope, magnitude, and the ripoff that we're receiving from education or from the war on cancer. A couple of more neat numbers over here. Going back to about 1962, 3, 4, 5, along there, or like when I was a kid in school, you know, back in the 1940s. The standard for behavior for right and wrong were derived largely from religious teachings. And when those teachings were disallowed in 1962, they were replaced with value-free teachings, allowing students to discover and set their own standards. Now the results are evident. A lack of discipline and school violence are now the more troublesome problems facing American schools. 14 of the 15 Gallup polls on schools during 1968 to 83 cited lack of discipline as the primary problem. Before the ban on religious teachings and education, the top public school offenses were listed as talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of turn in line, wearing improper clothing, and not putting paper in the waste paper basket. Now, the list of the top public school offenses are: number one, rape; number two, robbery; number three, assault; number four, burglary; number five, arson; number six, bombings; and number seven, murder. All right, let me pause right there. Let's compare the top seven infractions, problems, disciplinary problems that we had in public school before we moved from the Ten Commandments to the Ten Planks. Remember, it was talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of turn in line, wearing improper clothing, and not putting your paper in the waste paper baskets. Today, your top seven problems in public school are rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, and murder. In that order, put out by the Department of Education. Hell, I didn't know that rape was the number one disciplinary problem in public school until the Department of Education told me. They're the ones that keep track of the numbers. Used to be talking. Now it's rape. Number one problem. Didn't anybody teach these students thou shalt not commit adultery, that fornication is a violation of the law? Anybody heard of morality, decency? I know they're kind of wild new concepts, but I wanted to tell you that you can get this information from the book. It's called America to Pray or Not to Pray. The guy's name is David Barton. Jot this number down because you'll love this book. I mean, hell, if you're a liberal ding-a-ling, from New York City, you'll love this book. Even liberal ding-a-lings can learn something here. Wall Builder Press is the publisher. Wall Builder Press. Post Office Box 397 in Aledo, Texas. 76008. And that's a Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. And they got a phone number down there. It's 817-441-6044. Okay, once more, that phone number is 817-441-6044. That's about 150 pages, I guess. Let's see, 161 pages with the footnotes. And it's just filled with all kinds of facts and figures and fascinating information that will take you down the primrose path until you get to the conclusion that the more money you spend in your public school system, the dumber your kid will become. And both of your presidential candidates want to spend more money on public education. I say that public education needs to be abolished. I say it's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. All communists practice free education for all children in public schools. Americans, before we were converted to communism, used to practice the Ten Commandments and teach the Ten Commandments in our home schools. Of course, that was a long time ago, huh? All right, so what we've got here in public education is a racket. And get this, the mafia is not involved in this racket, but it's a $500 billion a year racket, of which $2 out of every three goes to administration, not to teaching your child. If you want that program, stick with it. That's what you've got. It's a proven winner. Education. Now, there's a corollary to this, and it's called the oil crisis, and it's a matter of education. I think Adolf Hitler summed it up nicely. Actually, Hitler didn't come up with this idea. It was Pope Clement XI, I believe it was, back about 1100 or 1200, and this guy, he was a pretty smart guy. You know, for a pope, that's not bad. He said, you give me a kid till he's 7 years old, and he'll be a Catholic for life. Well, that's saying a lot. That's what we call indoctrination. Indoctrination. And I've been indoctrinated. I was indoctrinated for 12 years in my public school system. Institutionalized I was for 12 years in public school. I am a recovering public school victim. I'm still trying to get that crap out of my brain. It rattles around in there, and I come up with all kinds of nonsense that I learned in public school. In fact, my whole life has been dedicated to reprogramming my brain, unlearning all of the crap that was taught to me. You know, like 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs died out. You know, I believed that for years and years. I tried to figure out, now, how did this work with God creating the world in 6 days and the dinosaurs dying out 65 million years ago? I had real problems with that. I didn't make any sense to me. I couldn't figure it out. And then you could ask the preacher in catechism, and he couldn't explain it. Oh, he mouthed off a lot of words. Preachers are good at mouthing off a lot of words, kind of like school teachers. They just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. They don't say anything, but they talk and talk and talk. Just listen to one of those jerks, you know, for half an hour and see if you can walk away from there any smarter than you were when you sat down and started listening. I went to church one time. It was a Baptist church. I don't know what the hell possessed me to do this, but for some reason I got religion, and I said, I'm going to go to this Baptist church. And so I went in, I sat down, and I listened to this guy, and he talked and talked and talked and talked. I don't know what the hell he talked about. But when he got all through talking, he said, now, I've probably raised more questions than I've answered. Now, I'm not sure that that was the case. I didn't have any questions at all. When he got all through, I didn't have any more questions than when I walked in. I didn't have any questions when I walked in. I didn't have any questions when I walked out. I didn't learn anything. I heard a lot of words, but I don't know what the hell he talked about. That was 30 years ago. I still don't know what the hell he talked about. So I said, well, ain't no point coming back here. I can't learn anything from this guy. He ain't got anything to say. And he says himself, he raises more questions than he can answer. Well, what the hell good is that? If you can't answer the question, why do we need to hear what the question is? I'm going to give you some questions, but we don't know the answers. What the hell do we need to know that for? I've said it before. I tell my students who walk in the door, I say, if we can't answer all these questions, we don't need to spend any time here asking questions that we don't have answers for. If there aren't any answers, then we don't need to know what the questions are. Now, fortunately, there's answers out there. And the answer to public school is simple. Close them down. They're just lying to you anyway. Not only is it expensive and you're turning out stupid kids, they're lying to you. Now, if you want to spend $500 billion a year to get lied to, I guess you can do that. But one of the lies that they're telling us over here is that we've reached peak oil, that the world is running out of oil. Now, that makes all the sense in the world. If you're selling oil, my God, that's good thinking. I don't deny that. I hear the auto ads. It says, hurry on in. What the hell? Is this car going to be sold if I don't hurry in this afternoon and I wait until tomorrow? Does that mean tomorrow I can't buy a car? If I don't get down there this afternoon, car's going to be gone. Well, I don't know what planet you're from, partner, but here where I'm from, they got so damn many cars sitting around out here, they don't know what the hell to do with them all. Car lots are full of cars. They can't give them away, can't sell them. Banks won't finance them. And then the ad last night, I was watching TV last night, and yeah, hurry in today to Youngblood Dodge Plymouth. Yeah. I don't know what the hell the hurry is. I guess damn many cars down here can't give them away. Looks like to me if I wait an extra 2 or 3 days, you know, they're probably going to be there. All right, so on this, and that makes sense. You got to get this guy to get off his ass and get in there and buy that car, you know, get this couch potato up off the couch, watching TV, get him in here and spending his money. Now, we got to have higher and higher prices, don't we? And I don't blame the oil companies for charging you $4 a gallon for gas. Hell, if I was selling gas and if I thought I could get $4 a gallon, I'd charge you $4. Hell, if I thought I could get away with charging you $8 a gallon for gas, I'd charge you $8 or $16 or $32. Now, the reason, you know, out here in the real world, the reason that gasoline's only selling for $4 a gallon is because if I try to sell the gasoline to you for $5 a gallon, you'll snub me and go down and buy it from Shell because they got it for $4. Why would you want to pay buy a gallon of Gordon gas for $5 when you can buy Shell gas for $4? And then some other Sharpie comes along and he sells it for $3.94.9. And so, oh my God, I can save 6 cents a gallon. So I think I'll go over here and buy it from ExxonMobil. It's called competition, see? Now, the oil companies ain't done. Old John D. Rockefeller figured this out not long ago. He said competition's a sin. Now, John D. Rockefeller, they call him the American capitalist. What a crock of crap. Rockefeller was not a capitalist. He was a monopolist. And he said so very plainly. Competition is a sin. So he worked hard to create monopoly. So that I've got all the oil, and if you want it, you got to buy it from me. And we don't want five guys out here having oil, so that you've got a competitive pricing structure over here where somebody can charge less or give you better gas or something like that. We don't want that. So the government teams up with the oil companies. And the government's a part of this racket. They've been involved in this racket from day one. And the government now taxes all this gasoline that you're buying. Take a look on the gas pump, and they'll tell you federal tax 17 cents, state tax 34 cents. Well, it's the way it is here in this state, in Missouri. So again, let's see, 34 and 17, that's 34, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51 cents. Okay, so out of a gallon of gas that they're now charging, last time I was in there, it's 356. And they're charging 51. All right, so $3.05 worth of gasoline is being delivered to me. And I got to pay $3.56 for it because the government charges me 51 cents. Because what does the government do to pump oil out of the ground or to refine gasoline? They do absolutely nothing. Nothing. Now they come along and say, well, we build the highways for you to run your cars on. That's what we want this money for. We want this money so we can build highways and stuff like that. Okay. Maybe that makes sense. Whether it makes sense or not, it's irrelevant. That's what they're doing anyway. Now, the prices I'm speaking, you know, the price of oil now is about $100 a barrel. Now, there's 42... There's 42 gallons to a barrel. So this crude oil comes in a barrel, and it's only got 42 gallons instead of 55. So we divide that 100 by 42, and then it costs us $2.38 to buy that gallon of crude oil. So somebody's got to send $2.38 to somebody else who's got that gallon of crude oil. It might be the Venezuelans or the Saudi Arabians or Iraqis or somebody, Texans. Alaskans. So the difference between 240 and 305, remember, 305 is the price of the gasoline, delivered to my gas station here in Isabella, Missouri, or Theodosia. All right, so how much is that? Let's see. Looks like 62 and 5 is 67 cents. So 238 goes to Saudi Arabia, 51 cents goes to the government. And so far, neither one of those two entities over there have made me a gallon of gas, delivered a gallon of gas, or pumped a gallon of gas for me. Government doesn't do anything for me, and neither do the Saudis. The people that actually do something for me, they take the gallon of oil, and they run it through their refinery and make gasoline for me. That's Standard Oil, or that's Mobil, or somebody. And then there's somebody that actually loads that gallon of gas up in a truck down in Baton Rouge or someplace and hauls it up here and unloads it in Isabella, Missouri. And then there's a guy there at the gas station who actually buys and pays for that gasoline, stores it in his underground tank until I'm ready to buy some. And then I can pull up to his pump, pump my gas tank full, and walk in and pay him, buy a package of something, and walk out the door. And for those services, that is the refining, that is the hauling, storage, sales, those guys get paid 67 cents. So the refiner, the trucker, and the retailer, they get to split 67 cents. Huh? Starting to get the picture here? All right, so we got $3.56, and we got 67 cents worth of real productive use. So we'll take 0.67, divide that by 3.56, and that means that 19%, let's just round it off to 20, 80% of the cost of my gasoline has absolutely nothing to do with the providing, the refining, the mining, or anything else with my gallon of gasoline. 20% does. Now, who is it that we bitch at when the price of gas goes up a nickel or a dime? My God, we're bitching at everybody that does something constructive to make us and give us and provide us with what we want and need. We bitch at Standard Oil. The other day, Exxon made, I don't know, $40 billion. And the government says, we need to tax them bastards. They're gouging us. No, they're not. Exxon ain't gouging you. They're probably wicked, evil, rotten, capitalist pigs. But they're not the guys that are gouging you. Hell, blame the Saudis. They're the ones that are getting $2.38. Now, the government ain't getting as much. They're only getting 51 cents. And the people that actually are providing some service for you and doing something for you to deliver that gallon of gas, they're getting 67 cents. But, you know, you're getting up there kind of pretty close to equal. If you take a look at government produces nothing. And then they get in the way of the people that are producing for you. Now along comes the oil companies, and they're in this too. You know, the government and the oil companies are in bed together, and they tell you, well, now the reason that this gasoline is so high is because there's such a shortage of it, and we've reached peak oil, and there's just so much demand that the Saudis the other day said they're going to cut production because the price went from $140 down to $90. Excuse me, but if there's a shortage, why wouldn't we want to be cutting production? And furthermore, if there's such a shortage, how come the price went from 150 down to 100? Now, I've reported this before, so let me tell you again. There's 14 trillion barrels of oil in the world that we know about. I don't know how much we don't know about, because I don't know what I don't know. But I do know we got 14 trillion barrels. Now, did you think I went out there and counted all them barrels of oil all by myself? Hell, I can't count to a trillion, and my Sharp EL1197 won't even take a trillion into its memory. I got it from the oil industry. I got it from the Department of Energy. I got it from National Geographic. You know, all the authorities out there that tell you where on hell all the oil is. The other day they came up, I saw a piece in the paper, 500 million barrels. 500 million. No, it was 500 billion barrels. Billion, excuse me. 500 billion barrels up in Montana and North Dakota. Guess what? They discovered that back in 1951. My God, if you've got a half a trillion barrels of oil up in Montana and North Dakota, and you know it's been there since 1951, that's enough to run the United States of America. Put 500 into my calculator. 500 divided by 6, that's how much we use. That's an 83-year supply. We Americans could just live off the oil that's up in North Dakota and Montana for the next 83 years and never buy another gallon from anybody else in the world. And that's just one pool. One crummy pool, for crying out loud. And guess what? Most of the oil that's being produced up in Alaska goes to Japan. It doesn't go to America at all. It goes to Japan. And then we turn around and take that money that we pay for that oil and we go buy it from the Saudis or the Venezuelans or somebody else. Oil is a big racket. There is no shortage of oil in the world. There's a 660-year supply, boys and girls. The world's using 30 billion barrels. Let me just do this for you. You got 14 trillion barrels. That's 14,000, and you're using 30 divided by 30 is, I lied to you. It's a 466-year supply that we know about, for crying out loud. And then I'm telling you, we're reaching peak oil. Now, there's peak oil, all right. And that peak oil is made up in the Congress of the United States and the boardrooms of the oil companies. That's where peak oil comes from. And all the rest of this crap out here that you're listening to on Katie Couric and Brian Williams and you're reading about in Time and Newsweek and the rest of it is a racket. Nothing more, nothing less. Lies, lies, and more lies. By God, if that's what you want is lies, lies, and more lies, you stick with the program you've got. It's a proven winner. You can't lose. You can't miss. You've already got it. You're right there in the top 400. Now, on the other hand, if you want to get the hell out of the rackets, you know, let's at least start identifying the rackets. Let's start identifying the guys that are lying to us, the guys that are the thieves. Now, I'm out of time again, kids. I've got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to adults by invitation. And all of these law or programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course, talking about the rackets. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and goodbye, friends.